Hello, welcome to Cam FM Trending from a foggy and dark Churchill College deep in November. I'm Aaron Siposh. It's great to have you with us. This is the podcast where we collate all of the best interviews, analysis and speech features from across Cam FM, Cambridge University and Anglia Ruskin University's student radio station. And we've got a really good one for you today. I spoke on Cam FM News Brunch last week with Andrew Nairn. He's the director of Kettle's Yard here in Cambridge, the art gallery, and he sat down with me to chat about his gallery's new exhibition, which comes from the Zimbabwean artist Portia Zwavahera. The exhibition is called Zwaka Zarura, which translates as Revelations into English. The name of the exhibition is in the artist's original language, the language in which she dreams, called Shona, and you'll hear more about that in my conversation with Andrew. The exhibition explores, among other things, dreams and the unconscious in a kind of unique layered paint style, and Zwavahera's Christian faith also plays a role in her work, as the name Revelations might suggest. The exhibition's running until the 16th of February 2025, so there's still plenty of time to go and see it if you're interested. And I really loved this conversation because it wasn't just a chance to talk about this new exhibition, but a really good chance to chat with Andrew about the state of public galleries in the UK in general. We get a little idea behind the scenes as to how exhibitions like this come about. This exhibition's a collaboration with a gallery in Edinburgh called The Fruit Market, so we have a little bit of an insight into how those collaborations happen as well. But we also talk about the very real funding challenges facing public galleries at the moment. This Portia Zwavahera exhibition is free entry to everybody, but parts of Kettle's Yard now charge since 2023 due to financial challenges. So you have a little bit of a dive into that as well, and what needs to be done really for public art and for Kettle's Yard to stay afloat and keep free open access to art for as many people as possible. So it's a really wide-ranging, full-fat, long chat with Andrew Nairn that I have, and we're very grateful that he gave some of his time. So I hope you find my conversation with Andrew Nairn about Kettle's Yard, about the new exhibition from Portia Zwavahera, Zwaka Zarura, interesting.
Cam FM.
Andrew Nairn, who's the director of Kettle's Yard, is with me. Thanks so much for being with me today, Andrew. Now, so Kettle's Yard has this new exhibition on at the moment from the Zimbabwean artist Portia Zwavahera. Now, the name of the exhibition, I've been trying to say it in prep for this, Zwaka Zarura, and it's in the artist's original Shona language. Could you just talk us through the title of the exhibition and the significance of it not being in English?
Yes, she very much was born in Harare, lives in Harare. She's with her husband, who's a sculptor, have three children. Despite the fact that she's now very much an international artist, she hasn't moved, I mean, to my surprise, in a way, she hasn't moved to New York or London or Paris. Shona is her kind of, is the main language, and she dreams in Shona. And in fact, the title we were quite keen to use, but Tamar Garb, who's the curator of the exhibition, who's a professor at UCL in London, has actually called, I think she's called her essay in the book, Dreaming in Shona, because we really love this idea of dreaming in Shona, because we can talk about this, but dreaming is a very big part of the nature of how she thinks about art and indeed her life. In the end, Portia wasn't keen to use that title, and actually based on previous exhibitions she's had, she was keen to use this word that means revelations, but to have it in Shona. I mean, it is pretty much impossible to pronounce in truth, so it's fine to just look at it kind of visually and know that it means this actually really interesting word, revelations, which has so many resonances and ideas. Again, I'm leaping into various themes, but she's a very strong Christian within the kind of Pentecostal church. So using the word revelations obviously links to her Christian faith, but it also links to the nature of these particular paintings. So it's actually a very powerful title. We don't try and not tell people what it means. You know, it means revelations. But she was keen that we used her language for it in the title.
Yeah, I mean, you've alluded to it there, this kind of real cultural mix that there is in the art. There's this kind of Christian iconography side of things, and obviously the significance of the Revelations title, but there's also more traditional Southern African printmaking techniques. Could you just talk a little bit about the mix that the artists put together for this?
Yes, I think that's what's so fascinating. I would argue, having looked at art for decades, that this is extremely original painting. So what makes it original? Probably what makes many artists' work original when it is original, which is that they synthesize or bring together numerous different influences and ideas to the point where it's theirs. It's not actually any of those influences, it's theirs. You can sort of point to some of those inspirations, but they're not sitting sort of alone in some kind of pure way. They're too integrated, too th synthesized into the final visual image that you're looking at. And again, Tamar is very firm about some of these ideas. So to some extent, I'm quoting Tamar Garb, the curator, when she's very strong on saying it's not narrative, it's not illustrative. So that's linked to this idea of to what extent is it actually a kind of illustration of an actual dream? And we can come back to that. But she will say that it's not true. Well, on the one hand, she makes a really important point about the fact that she was trained at art school for X number, for quite a lot of years. And she was trained by a tutor, sounds unlikely, but was from Bulgaria. But the point about it's not really about Bulgaria, it's about the fact that she was trained in modernist, if you like, European traditions. And it's not correct to look at the work and go, this is coming from some slightly obscure African. And then there is a danger here that you fall into kind of tropes and ideas around the other, which just aren't the case. I don't think they're the case for anybody, but then certainly not the case for Portia Zabajera. So she knows all about the history of art, and she trained at a very kind of Western, if you like, art school background. And indeed, many, for good or for bad, because it was a colony, many of the Western aspects of education in Zimbabwe now have come through from the colonial period, when it was Rhodesia, when Harare was Wellington. So to be more specific, though, fascinating that one of her teachers or main teachers at art school had a project for their students where they said, right, I want you to mix two different mediums in your two-dimensional work. So I suppose it could have been photography and painting, it could have been drawing and painting, it could have been various other things, collage. She chose printmaking and painting. And that has come through into the work that we see 10 years later or 5 years later when she started really being out from after art school, which was in around 2012. So these works that we're looking at the gallery at Kettle's Yard are an extraordinary synthesis mix of printmaking and painting. One of the things I find is rather brilliant that she uses printer's inks. So these printer's inks, I mean, I don't know whether it's like when we used to have fountain pens and you sort of spill your ink, but it's got a sort of gloss is not quite the right word. It's got a sort of fluidity about it, this ink, particularly in some of the earlier paintings in our smaller gallery. And it just gives a very particular atmosphere. It allows the paint to sort of swoosh around. Coming back to the Africa part is it's at the same time, Tamar Garb wouldn't want you to go, oh, it's nothing to do with Africa. It's irrelevant that she's been brought up and still lives in Harare. Not irrelevant. Obviously, we talked about Shona and this particular language, but also that yes, it's reasonable to say that the printmaking patterns that you see in the paintings, which are absolutely stunning, are in a way inspired from, as you might guess, African textile designs. But I don't think any of them are, again, completely direct. And interestingly, they don't match neatly because you do have bodies in these paintings, but the patterns don't somehow sort of neatly match. So it's not a case that you can look at a pattern in a painting and go, that's somehow the skirt or the dress. And coming back to why are they original? Well, my feeling at the moment, the show's only been up for a couple of weeks. And I've only seen some of the paintings in the flesh once in Venice 3 years ago. So, they're kind of new to us in the gallery in a way, but we obviously had a very strong feeling about how brilliant they were. Is I can't think of another artist who has used in an original way these sort of printmaking techniques, these fascinating patterns, and mixed them with quite expressionistic images, kind of expressionistic images of these sort of dream figures, animals and figures, to put them together. So they're quite traumatic looking, what's going on kind of behind the patterns or sort of among the patterns. But you wouldn't normally put them together. So it's not possible to look at the patterns and go, it's merely decorative, this painting, because you're actually looking at this synthesis with this quite strong, almost traumatic expressionism in some of the paintings.
Yeah, that's really interesting. This aspect that you've talked about there, the fluidity, the kind of expressionism, and you've mentioned it a couple times, this sense of the dreamlike, of the kind of unconscious. And there's one phrase that you use in the introduction to the book on this exhibition, which I found really captured something, this idea of personal cosmology. So could you just talk a bit about the dreaminess, the unconscious sense of some of these paintings?
Yes, I mean, I think the personal cosmology, and actually, I didn't write that sentence, and I had to kind of, quickly Google cosmology. I think it simply means personal, sort of philosophy in a way. And I suppose, again, it's trying to get away from an idea that you can unpick these paintings and say, this is exactly what's happening here, and this is exactly what's happening there. But the dream side is really important. And what makes it so she seems to have dreams that the rest of us don't have, and we have to kind of take that at face value. I don't know about you, but I tend to have rather predictable, leave my luggage at airports type
Oh,
anxiety
yes.
dreams. Exactly. I think those are fairly common for those of us under pressure, which is a lot
Not
of
so
us.
much being chased by rats as
Not
is the
so
case
much
in.
being chased by rats or owls, but we have to take it at face value in it, and she's a very genuine person, so that she does actually have dreams along those lines. And they seem to be, she's got this family of small children, very happy with Gideon, her husband. She does seem to have dreams which are effectively nightmares, in which various kind of angry animals or sort of aggressive animals, particularly rats. Well, I don't think, I'm certainly not very keen on rats. I'm not sure I've had those 1984 type
Oh,
nightmares
gosh.
recently. We in 1984, of course, that is absolutely kind of at the heart of the end of the novel. And it's clearly that making the paintings is a genuine kind of cathartic act of being able to kind of deal with these dreams. And sometimes a dream becomes the starting point for a number of paintings. So it won't be just direct. This again is what Tamar Garb, curator, would be keen to point out, that it's not a straight, I have a dream, and you're looking at it on the painting, on the canvas. She's bringing in all her ability as a brilliant artist about when to stop, when to start, the position of color on the painting, the amount of white space. They're actually very sophisticated paintings. But the dream is crucial to it. And I'm still slightly laughing, Aaron, because I don't know, you build up prejudices when you're a curator. And one of mine is, never show anyone who paints their dreams. I mean, it's bad enough listening to someone's dreams. That's a kind of no-no. As you eventually discover this when you're sort of 25, maybe you. But so paintings of dreams, absolutely never, never show them. Paintings of owls, definitely never show paintings of owls. We have paintings of dreams and owls at Kettle's Yard at the moment. So here's the thing. It's really great to be surprised. What keeps me excited about the contemporary art world and about artists is the way they surprise you, and they push things, and they give you things you weren't expecting, and
Yeah,
they
never say
revive.
never.
Never say never. They revive existing sort of themes, ideas. So what she's doing with her dreams is it's clearly the kind of the inspiration, and then she brings in. She has a sense of this pattern making color tradition from her African background in Zimbabwe. She is very aware of this mixing. Clever mixing of painting and printmaking, and what that does, that creates kind of layers and richness. It feels you can look at one section, it's a bit of a test. You can look at any section of the painting, and that alone would be worth really looking at. And you could almost sort of isolate it. And in fact, our previous exhibition, Megan Rooney, happens to be the same age, also born in 85, also made incredible paintings. We just had them in the gallery before Portia. Similar test, look at any of Megan's paintings. And one small section has enough to keep you going for a very long time. So, is it compelling? Do these paintings draw me in? Do they hold my attention? So, that is, it's not a trick, but it must be, we could be talking about music or writing novels or poems. It's a kind of layered richness that great artists, that really talented artists achieve, as opposed to It's quick. It's just a
Yeah.
sort of one line. It's not a one-liner. So all of those things are in there, and they feel very original. I mean, one other thing I found myself saying, and I said this at the various sort of speeches, and those who were there, who know in some ways know her work better than me, sort of agreed, is she sort of feels original because she kind of feels like outside some of the rather internal dialogues in the international art world. But then being outside, she then kind of comes back in again, basically. So what does that mean? It means that there is something very specific. She is choosing. She's a genuine, we don't talk about religion very much in galleries. I did tell my marketing team that they needed to let the local churches know this was for them, among other
Yes.
people. I actually come from a Church of England background. My mother was a preacher in the Church of England. I'm a rather weak Christian. I'm not afraid to say it. It's not like some strange cult. And there are a lot of Christians out there. They may not talk about it in a work context particularly. So I have some understanding of this idea of Christian, my
Yeah.
background. But for her, it's not a kind of once a year thing. It's a sort of serious part of her life. It's important. She's happy to talk about it. The paintings are linked to that. And it's up to us. We can ignore it, of course. And again, if we wish to. So Tamar was a very good was very good at sort of in a way she's written a brilliant essay which brings out all the context you could kind of get to or want to know. But with all good art, in some ways you need to know it and you don't need to know it. You've got to bring your own eyes. But this idea that it's outside the art world is linked to the kind of unusualness, I suppose, of this artist working in Harare, making these big paintings. They're coming from not invented dreams, real dreams. They're linked to her Christian religion. And then she's making these really original, sophisticated paintings. I mean, it's like bowling a ball in a cricket match. And you think you know every ball that's gonna, you're the batsman. You think you know every ball that's gonna come. And then suddenly this ball comes and goes, what? Where did that
Yeah.
spin come from?
A
Sorry, I don't know
curveball,
why
we
I'm
might
doing.
say.
Yeah, I don't know, a curveball. I don't know why I'm doing a cricket analogy particularly, but it could be some other analogy.
Well, no,
But
we cover
the kind
cricket
of
here
curve.
on Cam FM. We love a cricket analogy.
You cover cricket. Okay, I could have mentioned anything. Some of your listeners, I'm not a cricket person particularly, but it's just something about the surprise. And maybe again that people listening to this are turning the page of the novel that they're reading at the moment and they go, what happened? I just read that paragraph. I've never read a paragraph quite like that. And that's what it feels like with Portia. But that separation ultimately doesn't hold up because, of course, she's now with this gallery. She is with a gallery in Cape Town, which actually has a branch in Holland, in Amsterdam. But she's now with David Zwerner, which is one of the great kind of commercial galleries in the world, which means she's quite well known, even though this is her first museum show in Europe. So you won't have had a chance to see her work before in the UK.
So a unique
We're
opportunity.
really excited, really
Yeah.
surprised and excited by it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting you say surprise, because one of the other things I wanted to ask you about was how you go about getting an exhibition like this. This is a collaboration with a gallery in Edinburgh where the exhibition will go after this. What's the process in getting an exhibition going in a gallery such as yours?
Wow. There's the question. So there isn't one. I'm the kind of artistic, I'm the director of Kettle's Yard. I'm also the artistic director. So I am the equivalent of somebody in a theatre making the final decisions on which particular plays are put on. I do consult, I do talk to my staff, but one person thinks through, we do three major exhibitions a year. One person needs to be the person who thinks through which particular three, what's the order, what's the balance. We have an amazing, for anyone listening to this who hasn't been to the Kettle's Yard house, and if you're part of Cambridge University, or if you're just 25 and under, or a student at Cambridge University, it's completely free because we do charge others. So 25 or under, or Cambridge University, free. It's an extraordinary house full of art, which is part of Kettle's Yard, and it belongs to the University of Cambridge. So if you're a student at the University of Cambridge, you own this place that I'm running, by the way, and it has a very nice cafe and a nice shop, and you should come, and you can just walk straight in. And we're only closed on Mondays, so I'm doing my advert. But how do we choose exhibitions? Well, I'm obviously on the lookout all the time. I go to international events like the Venice Biennale, which is very famous every 2 years, the equivalent of the kind of Cannes Film Festival. I look and see artists. I listen to people a lot. This particular exhibition came about in a way that again makes me sort of smile, a bit like the dreams. It's sort of, Aaron, in a way, people like me would go, this isn't really how it's meant to happen. So I'll tell you what it is, but it's only happened once in decades in my experience. So I'm sitting in the garden at South London Art Gallery. They're a similar gallery to us, funded by the Arts Council. And it was after an opening, and I'm holding a bottle of beer, and I'm sitting next to somebody who works for David Zwirner, who I know quite well, or a bit, because I've worked with him before. And he says, "Oh, Andrew," he takes a swig of his beer, says, "Oh, there's this artist in Africa that we've just taken on at the gallery." He works in the London gallery. "I really think it's your sort of artist." And I just sort of went, "Oh, it's a bit late for this. And can we just keep drinking the beer and whatever?" Anyway, I think I wrote the name down and I sort of didn't really take much notice. But at the weekend, I thought, "Oh, I'll just Google the name of this artist." And the minute I pressed images and looked at the work, I had this, it's just a gut feeling you have. I know they're pathetic little images, but it's probably just on my iPhone. I just immediately thought, "Oh, hang on a minute. There's something going on here. I haven't seen anything quite like this." And so I then obviously looked a bit more closely. I looked at what exhibitions Portia had. And then within half an hour, I emailed seven or eight other directors of galleries around the UK to tell them I was interested in her work for two reasons. One was to say, "I want you to know I'm interested." Not quite back off, but kind of, you need to know.
You're getting your
One
dibs
of
in,
the,
yeah.
yep. And the other reason was to see if anybody wants to collaborate. Anybody was already thinking of Portia. So that's when Fiona Bradley, director of the Fruit Market, came back and said, "Oh, she's an artist on our list." So that's when we ended up collaborating. So this one came out of being recommended by a private gallery kind of director. That is not the majority, that is not the usual way. The usual way would be I see something as an exhibition. But also, Aaron, I'm watching people all the time. So sometimes ideas have been percolating for many years, and we talk to the team and we go, "This is the moment to do it." So right now, and I won't list them, there's a sort of permanent long list of artists that sort of moves in and out. And you're constantly thinking, it's very competitive. It's worth saying, people think, "Oh, you can just ask artists and they'll just say yes and it's all fine." I mean, you have to ask the right ones. You want a variety of exhibitions in the gallery. You have to raise money, so you have to think which exhibitions have the potential to bring money with them, or that you can raise money to support them. You have to think, are they likely to say yes? And then there's a very nerve-wracking moment. I just had it the other day with Sunil Gupta. So Sunil Gupta is a fantastic photographer, based in London, born in India, brought up in Canada. He's in every collection. He's in MoMA in New York, the Met, the Tate. He's brilliant. He's had a retrospective at the Photographers Gallery in London, but we think he needs another survey. Anyway, I went to see him, and there was a nervous moment, Aaron, where he was very friendly towards me. I know him slightly already, but there was a nervous moment where I say, "So Sunil, sorry, yeah, Sunil, what have you got coming up?" So I need to know what he's doing. It's a bit like
That's
trying to,
interesting. That's an
yeah,
interesting
think about it. There
dynamic
must be
there.
some equivalent, like sort of if you're trying to get the right director for your film. Maybe you can just find out without talking to them. So then his partner, Sharon, they're very close and they work together. He goes, "Oh, well, Andrew, we've got this survey." Survey is like a retrospective, so it's sort of an exhibition that looks back over an artist's career. So Sharon says, and I'm just sitting on their sofa in their studio art space off the Camberwell Road in London. And he goes, "Oh, well, we have got this survey coming up." And I'm sitting there, sort of my brow sweating, praying that they're not going to say the Barbican or Tate Britain, because is that Sunil Gupta, is that good? He could easily be having another retrospective after the Photographers Gallery at Tate or Barbican. I'm convinced he's brilliant. I mean, I'm not saying something other people don't think. Anyway, he then went, and I then said sort of something like, "Oh, where is it?" And he went, "Chennai." And I thought, oh, thank God, it's in
We
India.
can get one in the UK here.
Absolutely, it doesn't matter if it's it. I mean, obviously, it's interesting. He's got a survey in Chennai. Has no bearing on us doing a survey at Kettle's Yard in Cambridge.
Exactly.
So
Wow. It's a competitive world, isn't it, between
it's
these
quite
galleries?
nerve-wracking, and you make judgment calls all the time. I once asked, they're not so well known now, but Jake and Dinos Chapman, who were very well known at one point, sort of the Damien Hirst generation. I asked them, I got excited, decided to do a show with them when I was running a gallery in Oxford. And I knew the minute you decide, the minute you're sure you really want to do the show, like I'm saying about emailing all those galleries around the UK at a weekend, is the minute you're really sure you need to kind of nail it down, basically,
You need
because
to jump on it, yeah.
other people might be thinking the same thing as you. So when asked Jake and Dennis Chapman. They were literally asked by Tate Liverpool the next week, and Tate Liverpool had to wait 5 years because we
Oof.
did our show first. You
It's a
have to wait
high
about
stakes job.
five. Yeah, because you can't do the show. There are some exceptions, but in general, if you're in a sort of the public gallery network, a public museum gallery, whatever, you wouldn't do a show if someone's done it within 5 years before. So, you know, if you were an artist and you've just had a show at Camden Arts Centre, the Whitechapel, I don't know, South London Gallery, which I mentioned before, or Nottingham Contemporary or Turner Contemporary, Margate, I'm not going to give you a solo show without a gap of at least maybe 4 years. So it's just
Yeah,
not going to happen,
that makes total
basically.
sense. Yeah, I mean, so it's a really competitive and yet engaged process that you've got here. One thing I am curious about is you do mention again in the kind of introduction to this exhibition, the book, that these are difficult times for public galleries financially. We're in a period where sort of the free access to culture is more difficult to maintain by these public galleries than ever. What are your reflections on the challenges that are being faced by galleries at the moment, such as yours?
No, thank you for asking. It's not very less slightly less glamorous. Very, very challenging. We are part of the University of Cambridge. We do get direct support from the university. It's not as much as people might think. It's about 26% of our overall cost. So there's an awful lot to raise beyond. They're not paying for everything at all, but they are our colleagues, they're our friends. We work very closely with them. So that's important to say. We then get a grant from the Arts Council. There's a lot of money to raise every year. We're also kicking off an endowment campaign. So that's to do with increasing our small endowment so that we can make some things secure in the future. But more generally, yes, we decided a year and a half ago that we would charge for entry to the Kettle's Yard House. Kettle's Yard is both a beautiful house. So say anyone listening who hasn't been, you've got to go. It isn't anywhere else in the world. It's not in Oxford, it's not in Harvard, it's not in Yale, it's not in any of these other places. It's in Cambridge, and it's free for you guys. So come. Anyway, the house is very special, and we did feel that some people should pay to come in because it costs a lot to look after it. Almost all the artworks are not, there's nothing really under, it's all on what we call open display. So that means we have to have five people in there, being paid to enable the public to come in. So the costs every year are substantial. And I just got a bit fed up with looking at people coming in who were not donating, who could easily pay £10 or £12 to add gift aid. So we do now charge, and it's very sensible. That's bringing in a significant amount of additional income that helps pay the salaries of everybody else, helps us to keep the show on the road. More generally, yes, I mean, everything's related. If we do a show, if we do an exhibition that brings lots of people in, they tend to buy coffees, they tend to go in the shop and spend some money. It's very, very related. So if you decide to do a sort of cheaper exhibition, but not so much cheaper, but just kind of, I don't know, less ambitious, the less ambitious sort of show that people think that sort of on the face of it costs less, or at least costs less at the beginning, bring less people in. So we have to take risks all the time. We take risks doing ambitious shows that cost quite a lot of money on the basis that they're so good that some of our patrons and donors and foundations and trusts will come in and back it. So this one, we can't just this isn't all paid for
You're
through.
holding up the book just
I'm
for
holding
the
up the
people
book.
listening.
Sorry, holding
Yeah,
up the
the
book.
book from the
Very, very beautiful
exhibition.
book. But you might be asking, if you're so poor, how can you afford this book? Well, we're part of the University of Cambridge, so we are very proud of being able to produce publications and have scholarly essays and contribute to the notion of the university as being a sort of serious endeavor and
Yeah,
about new knowledge
absolutely.
and new research. So we do that, but we don't have, if you said, oh, have you just got a sort of budget for books? No. So we have to persuade a group of patrons or a trust or a foundation or sometimes the private gallery to help us to produce this. So David Swerner, who are the private gallery, I'm not going to say how much, but they gave us, a substantial amount of money. Not didn't pay for the show, didn't pay for the whole book, and we had to share it with the Fruit Market in Edinburgh. But they did give us some money towards this, and that's quite common practice. But we had to ask. It didn't just sort of come. And then something called the Ampersand Foundation gave us £20,000 towards the transport because
Yeah.
bringing some work from Africa
Absolutely. That's
was
a big operation.
expensive. So it's a real challenge. I mean, I think our a broader, I mean, there's so many things, Aaron, I could talk to you about on this. The broader thing is that we reopened Catalyst Yard in 2018. It probably sounds rather a long time ago, with these beautiful new galleries, with the cafe, with the education spaces, the research space upstairs. And that cost, it took 14 years. I wasn't here for all of it. It took 14 years to make that happen. It cost 11.2 million pounds. People killed themselves to achieve this, to create these incredible galleries. All kinds of people gave us money. We owe it to them still to do an incredible program. In what world are we going to produce literally world-class air-conditioned galleries as good as anywhere else? For those who don't realize, and I appreciate, why should they? We have two galleries. They don't look huge, but they are absolutely world-class. They're designed by Jamie Faubert, who's Canadian but lives in London. He recently redesigned the National Portrait Gallery. They are as good as anywhere. I always feel a little bit, and I understand it. Some students might come into Catalyst Yard and just take it for granted that this is kind of what it is. This is what it's like. No. No, you've got somewhere really, really good, Anyway,
Right on the
so
doorstep.
on your doorstep belongs to you. So if you've got those galleries, we're not going to do third rate exhibit. We're going to do everything we can, including taking some risks to show ambitious exhibitions. We don't always show people from other countries. We're very aware of climate change, just to be clear about this. Many of our exhibitions are by artists based in the UK. Most of them are. So this is rather the, not the exception, but out of, we're doing three shows, if we're doing six shows across through 2 years, maybe only one of them or two of them would involve bringing artwork from elsewhere, because that is one of the most, unfortunately, it's really not good on carbon emissions.
Of
The lorries
course, the transport.
bring, it's almost the most sort of the worst thing, apart from along with flights. And obviously we try and go by train everywhere where we can, just to be sort of clear. But yeah, I know there are real challenges. We need more donors. We need ex-students who are now doing really well to become patrons. And we do. In fact, it's worth saying many of our patrons went to Cambridge University, really appreciated Catalyst Yard. Some of them knew our sort of founder, Jim and our founders, Jim and Helen Ead. And often they were scientists, not artists, not they were not studying art history. And Catalyst Yard changed their lives. They came to the house, they experienced it, they borrowed paintings, which is something people can do, students can do. And it kind of made them go, yeah, I should learn to live with art. It really enriches everything.
Yeah, really, really inspiring thought there. And I'm aware of the time, Andrew, but if I could just ask you one last question. If you want people to take one thing away from this exhibition when they visit it, what do you think that will be?
Oh, it's such a good question. I hope, well, I think it's one of the tests of a another test of a great exhibition, apart from just compelling and holding you in this sort of sense of richness, is that it stays with you when you leave the gallery. So what I'd like to think is that if you spend a bit of time and you let these, I mean, they're both incredible colours. I haven't really talked about the colours. If you let these works with their different surfaces, the printmaking, the patterns, this sort of sense of, they really feel like they've got purpose. They really, even if you don't know what the story is, even if you don't know whether they're rats or not rats, doesn't matter. You get a sense of real purpose that this artist really cares. If some of that stays with you as you leave and in your mind, then I will be kind of delighted, that kind of
Fantastic.
richness. Living, looking at art gives you this kind of richness, very similar to an incredible movie, reading an amazing book. I'm not making an overclaiming for the visual arts, but it can just give you something that stays with you and just makes you feel stronger. And, in our opinion, which is quite pushing it a bit, it can make you make better decisions in the world, in my opinion. If you engage with art more widely and more regularly, it sort of empowers you. It actually gives you something that makes you more confident and more capable in the world. We hope we're a very welcoming gallery for anyone, not just in Cambridge, but anyone in Cambridge and beyond. So please, anyone listening to this, do come and see us. We'd love to see you.
That's a fantastic thought to end on. And the exhibition is viewable until the 16th of February 2025. Andrew, thanks so much for being with me today. Really appreciate your time. And yeah, hopefully people will make their way down to Kettle's Yard.
Not at all. A pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that chat with Andrew. A real insight into the art world and just how things get done there, really. Now, I'm excited to announce, in a CamFM trending first, I've got a little bonus bit of that interview now, which we couldn't fit into the radio broadcast of this show on CamFM News Brunch. Just before we went, Andrew wanted to add just a little something about another event coming up at Kettle's Yard after Porsche's Vavahera.
One thing I wanted to mention is that the next exhibition immediately after this is called Paint What Matters! And this is really a unique show. It's an what we call an open exhibition. That means anyone of the age of 21 or under, so hopefully many of you listening, can take part. We're making a kind of grid with coloured string in the gallery, which means that every single artist who submits a work will be in their sort of A3 space in our main galleries. And it's called Paint What Matters because what we're trying to do is encourage people to do, they don't have to be paintings, but, you know, drawings, colourful would be good, about something they care about. Could be the environment, could be their pet cat, it could be the Middle East, it could be anything. Yes, we've got an amazing age range, it's true, all the way from 4-year-olds to 21-year-olds. But if you're 18, 19, 20, 21, don't be put off by being that you might be next to a 6-year-old. You'll be in your own space. You'll be in our incredible international galleries. There's no entry fee. There's no selection panel, unless it's kind of obscene or something. You'll get in. And it's called Paint What Matters. And you can find out about it on the Kettle's Yard website.
There you go. Paint What Matters. Something to get involved in there for budding Cambridge artists. And I'm sure we might try and speak to Andrew again back around when Paint What Matters is getting underway in February 2025. God, it's weird to think about 2025 being around the corner, isn't it? I hate to say it's not even long till Christmas. But sorry, enough of that. Thanks for making it to the end of this episode of CamFM Trending. It's great to be able to speak like this. We always really appreciate you listening in. You'll be able to find much more on our Spotify feed. We've got some great interviews. Daisy's just spoken to someone from the Cambridge Film Festival, which has been happening this past week. So that's an exciting one to get into that I'd recommend. You can also listen back to Daisy and I's conversation with Count Binface or the comedian Phil Wang, my conversation with him last year now, I suppose. Plenty to get involved in. Also, loads of great shows, a huge variety to listen over at camfm.co.uk or on 97.2 FM in the Cambridge area. This is CamFM, the student radio station for Cambridge University and ARU. This has been CamFM Trending. I've been Aaron Siposh. Thanks so much for listening. Please do follow, share, like, all of that business. And I'll speak to you again soon.